Well, good morning. It's a great joy to be able to share today with you, a day that some of you have been working at for a number of years, and a 9-month gestation period is actually shorter than I thought might have happened. But you have arrived at the stage. Part of the joy of coming today is brings back lots of memories. My father preached in this church about 50 years ago, when obviously from those pictures it was regarded as being a proper church. Things move on. I've known some of you for 38 years and look back over high times. There have been those, haven't there? And there have been some low ones too. Joys and disappointments. Somehow I come to a conclusion this stage of my life that church is about doing life with Jesus. Life in all its fullness is the great days and the sad days, but we do it with Jesus there. And over all those years, he's been faithful. If you just started recently with him, he'll be faithful to you. In case you haven't noticed, or maybe been on a desert island with no Wi-Fi connection, pretty turbulent days in Britain at the moment, aren't there? It's as if anxiety and uncertainty has gripped a nation by its throat. And people are unsure of where to go. That turbulence affects churches. I've got a theory, it's unproven, that what's going on in the nation and expectations of leadership at a political level are often replicated in church life. So we want the strong leader. We want the compassionate leader, the tender leader. Good words to you, man. Always be yourself, because that's all you can be. I remember earlier in the summer somebody saying, if Winston Churchill was alive today, he'd be turning in his grave. Well, Winston Churchill's not alive today. He won't be turning in his grave, but how do you cope in that state of turbulence? What's leadership going to look like in the next 10 years? Back in the 1950s, a survey of 690 ministers asked what their role was all about. What were their key responsibilities? And the clarity of their responses went like this. Number one, first task is preacher. Second, pastor, followed by teacher, organizer and administrator. What if you asked 30 people in any church in Britain, what do they want their pastor to do? Would there be clarity? I doubt it. You might ask 30 people and get 50 different answers, which places enormous weight of responsibility on a pastor. I believe it's going to be vital for the church in the future to have a generation of leaders who can plot their way through uncertainty, anxiety, and chaos. Which means church is going to be pretty messy in the future. And you're going to have to cope with the mess that sin produces in a society and minister to many hurting people. You're going to need a lot of wisdom, Simon. I want to take you to one of the wisdom books, the book of Ecclesiastes, for just a few minutes and look at the subject of leadership in turbulent times. I spot 5 qualities of that kind of leadership that will help you calm some troubled hearts and maybe troubled churches in a period that's still to come. First of all, verse 1, leaders help make people make sense. A writer who's King Solomon is sort of posing questions. He's looking at life from many perspectives, essentially of an atheist or a secularist in this section. He's got a view of life that he doesn't necessarily share but expresses. So, verse 1, who's like the wise man? Who can know the explanation of things? Here's a small piece of Irish logic from an Irishman. It's heard frequently in Irish bars. It goes like this. Nobody has any sense in this world unless he hasn't, and he's a fool too. Can you understand that? Is there an explanation? Well, actually, there is an explanation to that piece of Irish logic, but you might have to be an Irishman to understand it. That means everything to a tenant farmer who may have had his home burnt down, his land seized by oppressive powers, but we won't go into that. And he stands looking at the chaos and says, nobody has any sense in this world unless he hasn't, and he's a fool too. There isn't an apparent explanation unless you have the wisdom and understanding of the particular set of circumstances to have that understanding. And so today we have a multiplicity of ideas about what the church should do and how you should do it. The books that are written are sort of fix-it manuals. There is no fix to the church. There's no explanation from a human perspective that will actually satisfy the deepest questions people have, the search for meaning in your communal life as a church. But Solomon tells us in verse 1, there is an explanation, and it's going to be the wise person who knows the explanation. In Ecclesiastes, the writer writes about education, money, relationships, health, government, work, and lots of other things. And he postulates the view that it's all meaningless. But is it? He speaks about life from two perspectives. One's life under the sun, and the other one is life over the sun. And what he's essentially saying here is that a leader is going to lead the perspective of life over the sun. Life from God's expectation of what reality is. It's a bit like flying into Gatwick. And I know you're not under the sun. Well, you're not over the sun when you fly into Gatwick. You're under it, aren't you? But you can see miles and miles in front of you. Christian leadership will see the big picture. It will have the explanation that comes through God's wisdom. And my experience was that the reality of church leadership was that most people in the church will see things from their perspective, the immediate, what's right in front of them. So if someone's concerned about children, church is all about children. If there's a need for more musicians in the church, pastor, fix it, will you? Get an explanation of how we deal with that. Then there's the needs of youth, men, women, children, single people. The people around here who are unemployed, who just got broken lives through addictions. Can't we do all of those things? Well, you could do all of those things, but if you only see the immediate, and then you say to the pastor, hey, we've employed you, it's your job to deal with it. Now, you wouldn't think like that, would you? Yes, you would. Yes, you would. This is not Mr. Fix-It married to Mrs. Polyfiller. Mrs. Polyfiller fills every gap that the church will have. No, a proper explanation of these things from over the sun is, according to Ephesians 4:12, a pastor is a gift given, accompanied by the word teacher, pastor, teacher. Ephesians 4:12 says to equip God's people for works of service. So every bright idea that you bring to the pastor, if your pastor is wise, will be, well, I really look forward to see what contribution you could make to that area of ministry in our church. That will be an explanation which goes beyond the immediate and sees the big picture. So I urge you, don't get caught up in the minutiae, because it will overwhelm you. Spend time with God so that you see his explanation. A bricklayer was once asked what he was doing, and he said, well, I'm coming in every day. He didn't say, though, I'm earning a living, or I'm just laying bricks every day. Instead, he responded, I'm building a cathedral. He saw the big view. I urge you, see that. Because it will avoid a trap that I saw one pastor falling into, and actually he fell out of love with the church and they fell out with him, and he ended up leaving. And do you know what the issue was? What kind of video projector they should buy. He wanted an Epson, and a couple of leaders wanted a Hitachi. And that was it. Disaster. He should have seen things from above, the big picture. I think of another leader in the same area. I said to him, so what's your church about? And he said, quick as a flash, community transformation. He knew what he was about. The other one got caught. So leaders help people make sense. So avoid the rubbish. Secondly, leaders shouldn't take themselves too seriously. I like this bit. Second part of verse 1. Wisdom brightens a man's face and changes its hard appearance. Apparently research at the University of Michigan in the States found out that the average child laughs 150 times a day. And the average adult laughs, have a guess. 10. Pessimist. 15 is the answer. It's nothing really in comparison with a child. Wisdom lightens the face. So keep laughing. Now I know some of these people will keep laughing, and some of them will be laughing at you within a few weeks, but you know, you can cope with that. Just dish it back. Sometimes church leaders just get so caught up in things that they feel that the responsibility for the apparent success of a church is theirs. It's not yours at all. You're powerless in that area. The church belongs to Christ. He's the head of the church. He's responsible for the church. You don't have to be. And that's one of the most liberating truths a pastor can have. The Lord holds the church in his hands. And he's up to the job. You're not. So may wisdom brighten your face. Don't take yourself too seriously. Thirdly, got five things, so we've got to move quickly. Leaders concentrate on their calling, not their position. Verse 2, it says, obey the king's command, I say, because you took an oath before God. Now, what does he mean by you took an oath before God? Some say it's an oath you take directly to God. Or in taking an oath to God, you also honour, respect and obey his appointed leaders. I think the latter is most likely. It's an oath of allegiance that you take honouring God to honour the leaders in your land. Now, do you think that's going to be tricky over the next 10 years? Mightily so. As an increasingly secular value system dominates policy and law. How are you going to lead the church through those tricky issues? If you feel that your calling is more important than your position, you're going to obey God first. And that may make you unpopular with some civic authorities and the church as well. And it make you unpopular with some people in the church as well, whose mindset isn't so shaped by the Bible as by the environment we live in. But if you know that first, Simon, you're here because God called you here, you'll be okay. If you think you have some rights and you have some status, you can see the position as being all important. It's dangerous. Because sometimes you need a spiritual backbone as a pastor, which may not say this, but it might. And I only said it once in about 35 years of Christian ministry, when somebody pushed me too hard. I said, I'm here because God sent me here. And if he hadn't sent me here, I'd have gone and got a proper job. Because you're not here to please the church, you're here to please God. And sometimes in pleasing him, you won't please everyone else. But if you're here because God sent you, you won't concentrate on your position, but your calling. Fourthly, leaders don't pursue bad causes. This is verse 3. and 4. Don't be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he, the king, will do whatever he pleases. So how do you deal with a corrupt king?
It's going to be complicated, isn't it?
So you're going to need the wisdom to know, verse 6, that a wise heart will know the proper time and procedure for every matter. There is a proper time and procedure for every matter. I expect if you worked in an office, there were procedure manuals about everything. Well, it's a little more complex in church because everyone thinks it's the procedure. They know the procedure, and the procedure is based on what you did 10, 15, 12, 100 years ago. The church is really old, a proper church. But no, how long have you been going now? 10, 12 years? 15 years! Goodness me, 15 years. Doesn't seem a day too long, does it? It does for some of you who've been leaders through that. But there are right and proper things to do. There's ways of doing things. But they might have to be challenged. One of the lessons that I learnt about church leadership towards the end is you can try and do too many things. And you drive yourself and everyone else scatty. A good question for a church to ask is, what do you want to do next year around this time of year? What are our priorities for next year? Get those agreed by leaders and by people, and then go for them. Be accountable to one another. You're saying, if that's a priority, we will concentrate on that. And that other thing might have to wait another year or two, because we don't have the resources, we don't have the people, we don't have the finance to do those things. So let's stop talking about them and get on with those things. There's a proper time and procedure. Leaders don't pursue bad causes. And then, fifthly, lastly, verses 7 and 8. Leaders know their limitations. So often the Bible puts us in our place. Solomon writes, don't think that you know the future. You don't. Don't think you have power over the wind. Don't think you can control the day of your death. You're not in control of very much at all. And yet I've known some leaders who are sort of no-limit leaders. They're indomitable. They're over the hill, straight away, let's go! And they've gone. They've gone from serving God. They've gone from walking with God. Because they forget that God lifts up the humble. God is very compassionate to the broken. So you are a dog poo remover for OMF. That is not a high status position. I remember a guy called Phil Barnard, who's now bigwig in the Baptist Union. When he started his ministry, I was invited to preach his induction, and I said, Phil, you need to regard your status as, and I couldn't really think what to say, and the thought that came to mind was bag carrier and picker upper in McDonald's, but actually you've gone even lower than that position in OMF. That's a real privilege. It should be written in the annals. You see, it's easier to talk about leadership, to write about leadership, than actually to lead. Solomon started with massive advantages of birth, natural talents. He had a supernatural gift of wisdom. Everything went well. His big problem was coping with success. He sees his growth in power and influence and thinks, haven't I done well? He had a 7-year building project, it was called a temple. He dedicated it to God. It was a great day for the people of God at that time. But then a downward spiral commenced, and it commenced very rapidly because he started the ultimate grand design project. He started building his own place, twice as big as the temple, and took twice as long to build. He'd lost focus. On God, but on himself. Philip Yancey, in a good book called The Bible That Jesus Read, that Solomon was the earnest ruler who had showed such promise, but ended up defying God's rules against the king's excesses. The author of 3,000 Proverbs broke them with an immoderation that has never been equaled. That's some obituary, isn't it? How sad. How sad that two major problems beset King Solomon. One was horses, which I'm not going to talk about. The other was women. He was a bit to excess. 700 wives and 300 concubines does seem excessive, doesn't it? And although the Bible never encourages polygamy, you find it stated it was what was happening. Just guard yourself. Guard your marriage. Have some people who check you out. And don't forget that you're very limited. No matter what people will say about you on these kind occasions, Christian leaders are terribly frail. I look back and think, I can talk better about leadership than actually lead. I was once regarded as an expert in youth work, and then I had teenagers. It doesn't work like that. We're really not up to it. Paul says, God puts his treasure into pots of clay. Ordinary things. He loves to lift up the weak and the frail. Therefore, make wisdom and its pursuit a lifelong exercise. Keep learning. Proverbs 4 verse 5 says, get wisdom, get understanding. And in saying that, he's pointing in the direction of Christ. Because Jesus would come along many years after Solomon, say, this Matthew 12:42, the queen of the south will rise at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to listen to Solomon's wisdom. And now one greater than Solomon is here. That great? Great Solomon, great wisdom. There's somebody greater, it's Jesus. Solomon's glory is compared in the New Testament to just a common lily. Comes and goes. Solomon spoke God's wisdom. Jesus is the wisdom of God. Solomon spoke the truth. Jesus is the truth. Solomon analyzed life from many angles. Jesus is life. Solomon was a great king. Jesus is King of Kings. Solomon, like us, is very flawed. But he pointed to one who was perfect. He'd give his life as a perfect sacrifice to bring sinful people like us, undeserving people, to God, where we find his forgiveness, his mercy and his grace. Therefore, Paul writes in Colossians 2, verse 3, in him, that's Jesus, are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. In him you'll find all that you need. Therefore, you're going to need the wisdom of Solomon, but you're going to need even more of that because of the turbulence you're going to find yourself in. You're going to need the Lord's wisdom in making decisions, dealing with complex issues, emotional ups and downs of life that I spoke about briefly at the beginning. That's the stuff of Christian ministry, doing life with Jesus. A pastor sent me an email yesterday, and at the end he said, we're into September now, and as ever, church life is a lovely mix of great encouragement, frustrations, people being an absolute blessing, and others being an absolute pain. And I thought, he's ready for September. That's the stuff of Christian ministry. There is no other. So when King Solomon says, get wisdom, get understanding, he's saying, go in the direction of Jesus, one in whom you find all the resources you need now, and in the days ahead.